Welcome to Marvelous Disney, the podcast that discusses the most recent doings of one of the more dynamic divisions of the Walt Disney Company, which is, of course, Marvel Entertainment. This is entertainment writer Jim Hill, and I am recording this week's episode with the amazing Aaron Adams on Thursday, October 20th, 2022. So we're roughly a week out from Halloween. Are we decorating Casa Adams for no. All Hallows Eve?
No? No, it's always a horror show in this house, so we don't have to decorate.
Okay. Yeah, Nancy and I don't honestly make the effort as well, largely because I think in the 25 years that we've been together, we got trick-or-treaters once. Anyway, given that we're a week out from Halloween, kind of appropriate that we have some Agatha Harkness-related news. That witchy Marvel character who made her Disney Plus debut back in January of 2021 on WandaVision and then went on to earn her portrayer, Catherine Hahn, an Emmy nomination for Outstanding Supporting Actress in a Limited Series or Anthology or Movie, is now getting her own limited series, Agatha, Coven of Chaos. And Brooke Geiger-McDonald chatted up Ms. Hahn as she walked on the red carpet at this year's Chicago International Film Festival earlier this week. And Brooke asked Catherine for an update on this WandaVision spinoff. And Hahn revealed and said, "We're in the middle of getting the coven ready, and it's going to be very delicious. We start shooting in about a month." So I myself am really looking forward to Agatha, Coven of Chaos. Also because who else is rumored to be part of that show, which we'll get to in a moment. During the news portion of today's podcast. And as always, the news portion of Marvel Us Disney is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. Now, before we jump in here, Aaron, have you been paying attention to all of the casting news over the past week?
Which casting news specifically?
This ties in with Ironheart, which, again, another limited series Marvel Studios is doing for Disney+. It's been shooting in Atlanta since June.
Was Ironheart coming before or after Armor Wars?
I want to say it's coming before.
Okay, so it could be a catalyst for. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, because, again, the Riri Williams character will be making her MCU debut next month. She's a featured character in Black Panther Wakanda Forever, being portrayed by Dominic Thorne, and Disney is looking for different ways to raise awareness of the Black Panther sequel. So there's a new Target ad, which just dropped back on Tuesday this week, which is actually built around the Riri Williams character, showing her serving as the inspiration for this young Black girl who's taking out a project in her science class. And again, it's just, you know, Disney doesn't miss a promotional angle ever. Anyway, Ironheart's been shooting in Atlanta, Chicago. Production should normally be winding down at this point. Again, it's a limited series. But Marvel Studios recently announced a few new additions to the Ironheart cast. We have Paul Calderon of Pulp Fiction and Bosch fame. He's coming to this limited series in an undisclosed role. That news comes by way of Deadline.com. Likewise, Sonia Dennis, who recently scored an Emmy nomination for her writing on HBO's A Black Lady Sketch Show, has also joined the cast of Ironheart in a yet-to-be-revealed role, and that news comes by way of Variety. So, Ironheart, 6 episodes, supposed to debut in the fall of 2023. So, Aaron, at this point, we're a year out, really, from seeing anything that's been shot in Chicago and Atlanta over the past 5 months.
They better be hour-long episodes, otherwise I'm already feeling cheated.
Well, but again, we're going to get to meet Dominix Riri, who's supposed to be this genius inventor who's created the most advanced suit of armor since Iron Man in Wakanda Forever. And in that section of the MCU timeline, Riri is this brilliant kid studying at MIT up in Boston. Not sure what happens, but where the story picks up with Ironheart, Ms. Williams is back in her old neighborhood in Chicago, where she's now interacting with Anthony Ramos's character, Parker Robbins. Now, does that name ring a bell to you at all?
Not at all. No.
All right. This character in the Marvel Comics made his debut back in July of 2002. Robbins, who's just originally a petty criminal, somehow gets the upper hand in a battle with a demon, who's then forced to surrender his hood and boots to Parker. And once Robbins puts these out,
I'm just on. Imagining the scene from The Terminator. Give me your clothes. I want your jacket and your sunglasses. I have defeated the demon. I will now gain your powers. I am level 4 Terminator.
Okay. It just sounds ludicrous when you just read it so point blank like that. I'm sure it looked great in the comics, right? Mm-hmm. It always looks great in the comics. But when you just read the bullet points, sounds kind of silly. But go ahead, please.
It does. And now I really want to see Anthony do Schwarzenegger. But okay. Right,
yeah. Okay.
All right. Once Robbins puts these items on, he gains superpowers, such as levitation and invisibility. Parker gets his superpowers through supernatural means, magic, whereas Riri gets her superpowers through tech and her own good old-fashioned know-how. So this is what's supposed to make Ironheart different from all of the other limited series that Marvel Studios produced for Disney Plus today. It's supposed to be the very first show where characters who have very different sources for the superpowers, tech and magic, face off. And I'm not sure if I actually buy into that sort of creative conceit, you know, that this is going to be the first show with a tech and magic face-off, because didn't that happen in Avengers Infinity War with Doctor Strange? And if he wasn't tangling with Thanos, he was dealing with Tony Stark or Peter Quill?
Well, I mean, you put Doctor Strange up against anyone, and it's because he's like one of the only magicians, so it would be magic versus X, whatever his opponent is.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think the point that they're driving at, more or less, is if you look at Iron Man 1 as a film, it was an Iron Man suit versus a bigger Iron Man suit.
Yep.
If you look at The Incredible Hulk, it was a Hulk versus an Abomination, just another Hulk-type thing. Mm-hmm. If you look at Ant-Man, it was Ant-Man versus the Yellow Jacket, which also shrunk down, Mini versus Mini. So usually when you have the origin story, and it does go even to Doctor Strange, because he was doing magic versus magic. So in their origin stories, it's usually them plus a photocopy of them in photo negative. I'm the good version of Mini-Me, you're the bad version of Mini-Me. So goes the plot to Ant-Man, right? So I think in that sense, they're saying, we've done this formula so many times. And I think they even brought it up in She-Hulk about how formulaic some of these things can end up being. True. And Kevin replied with, who is saying these things? I'm saying these things, Kevin. yeah, they can be formulaic in those extents. So normally, if you do have a girl who's building a tech suit, she's usually got a best buddy who's also building a tech suit, and then they have a tiff, and then they have a tech fight. And that's not the case in this. It's going to be tech versus magic right from the get-go, and she's not tested her suit yet, right? Maybe. Or maybe in Black Panther she'll get to test a little bit. Who knows? But it is a different tweak on their normal introduction show formula.
Thank you for using the word introduction, because what also is supposed to make Ironheart special is that once Parker Robbins acquires his magical powers, this former petty thief becomes a well-known figure in Chicago's criminal underworld and eventually forms his own crime syndicate, which is when his activities reportedly catch the attention of another Marvel Comics character who has magical abilities. Mephisto? Am I saying that name right?
Yeah, Mephisto. Now, okay, so Mephisto, way back when Disney Plus was starting and we were getting our very first WandaVision.
Right.
There was always a rumor, Mephisto's in the background, guys. Mephisto's coming up next episode. I can't wait. Did you see it? That was a hint towards Mephisto. I know it. I know it. And it didn't happen. Like, Mephisto never showed up. And then I don't know what the next one was. It could have been Loki, but it seemed like there were two or three Disney Plus Marvel shows where people go, oh, guys, Mephisto, right around the corner. They're hinting at it. And it's never, ever happened. So now that they're, you know, we've got it, is this confirmed?
I brought up Mephisto because over the past week, the internet has blown up over the news that Sacha Baron Cohen, a Borat fame, has reportedly been cast for a role in the MCU. And this is a role that is supposed to be prominently featured in several upcoming projects, reportedly Ironheart and Agatha, Coven of Chaos.
Well, the Agatha connection isn't so bad, but let's back up. Most people, I think, when they heard the Sacha Baron Cohen connection in that story, immediately did a Borat impersonation in their head. They go, that's nice, or whatever the Borat thing was.
And they immediately laughed off the idea of him playing the character because he's so associated with Borat. But he's a very, very versatile actor.
He is.
Who is very chameleon-like. And part of his shtick is the fact that he can do some deep makeup and become a different person entirely and fool people. And I think that's one of the charms of the Mephisto connection of it. Once you get past the stupid Borat impersonation that you're doing in your head, that's actually a very brilliant choice of actor for that role. And even if you look at, like, I don't want to say he's got like a long face, like the old joke of the horse, hey, why the long face? But it's slender, it's narrow, it's angular. And if you look at all of the drawings of Mephisto, he's got some of those same characteristics.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely.
And I think he looks the part. He could definitely play the part. And Marvel hasn't made too many horrible choices when picking an actor for a character. They see something there. And I think they're accurate.
Well, that is the talk, that Coen's been cast as Mephisto and that this magic versus tech thing will be a very big part of the MCU going forward, with this particular concept storyline weaving its way through phase 5 and 6. So, again, going to be interesting to see how this pays out.
That's another thing that we should address very briefly that you said, that this is playing out over phases 5 and 6. So Mephisto's a pretty big, big bad guy, right?
Right.
In the olden day, you had your solo movies with a solo bad guy, but behind it all was just Thanos as the big bad leading up to the Infinity Wars. I get the feeling that besides Kang, we're going to have some other big baddies that are going to linger around for more than just an episode or more than just a movie and then disappear quietly into the night. We might have several big bads that do things that all lead to one huge event. And so instead of having a Thanos and his army for everybody to battle, they're going to have an army of bad guys, of villains, and Kang leading the way. That everyone has to overcome as well, which may make for that. You know, you said that in an earlier episode that they wanted to do a bigger battle than Infinity War and Endgame. Well, that's how you do it, is you add more bad guys. You know, you've got all the good guys. Now you add more bad guys and voila, bigger, instead of just Thanos and random baddies, right?
Interesting. Okay, now the trades have reached out and reps at Marvel Studios and reps for Sacha Baron Cohen are refusing to comment on any of the news in regard to Cohen possibly being cast in Mephisto for any future MCU project. So,
well, that's quite obviously because they've got duct tape over their mouth and a bag over their head, thanks to the Marvel PR
team.
There we go.
Marvel's equivalent of SEAL Team 6. So,
yep.
Apologies, folks, but we're probably going to have to wait till fall of 2023, which is, again, when Iron Man and Agatha Coven of Chaos are both supposed to debut on Disney+. That said, one piece of casting news, which our Marvel Studios initially dismissed as a rumor, the company is now happy to admit is the real deal, and I think we talked about this on the last show about Harrison Ford replacing the late William Hurt as General Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross coming into the MCU, and he's officially going to make his debut in this role opposite Anthony Mackie in Captain America: New World Order.
Right now, we're going to call out to our friend Pascal in Canada, and I'm going to say, what if he shows up in the Thunderbolts movie, Pascal? What about that? Because he was telling me he only showed up once in the comics. He's not really associated with him, but what if they make him associated with it? That only makes sense. He's got the same name, right? Come on. Pascal.
Okay. Now, again, we are talking about things that are kind of over the horizon here. That MCU film, currently slated to release in theaters in May of 2024, doesn't even begin shooting till March of next year. Julius Ohna will be directing, and much of the production will be happening down in Atlanta, as is typical for the Marvel Studios productions at Tri-Lit Studios. That said, it will be nice to see Anthony Mackie, who did such a good job with Falcon and the Winter Soldier, which debuted on Disney Plus back in March of 2021. Getting to continue his Cap storyline, I especially like that this time it's going to be up on the big screen. But I was kind of hoping by now, Aaron, that we'd have some news about whether Moon Knight, which debuted on Disney Plus just 6 months ago, whether that would be continuing on in some form in the MCU, whether up on the big screen or as a second season for this acclaimed limited series. And in a recent interview with comicbook.com, Oscar Isaac, who played Mark Spector and then all of his alters, admitted that there have already been some discussions with Marvel Studios about what they could possibly next do with the Moon Knight character. And nothing definite, mind you, just polite talk up until this point. Here's the exact quote from Isaacs. It's like, there have been some specific conversations. They were pleasant. The spilling of the details is there are no details to share at this point. We don't know if there'll be a second season of the show yet, but we're talking about it. So kind of your classic no answer.
You know, somewhere at Marvel Studios, they've got a room, and it's like the classic where the guy went crazy, and he's got the pictures up with the string attaching all the different connections, and just listen to me, guys, it's a conspiracy over here. You know, so what they've got are actual Marvel storylines and characters that are attached with thread to them. And right now, Moon Knight doesn't have a piece of thread connecting to anything, and they're like, well, we could put him here, or we could put him here. But they do know specifically, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania's got Kang in it. And I think that's a direct path straight up to Secret Wars, right? That's like a main highway with no off ramps going to that direction. Whereas Moon Knight, he's on dirt roads right now, off in the woods with a map going, where the hell are we going, guys? I don't know. I think we should go left. Where do you guys want to go? You want to go right? And they just haven't decided the path for him to get to the place that they want him to go just yet, because right now, all the pieces are all in motion, except for like 10. And it's kind of like, do you jump on that train while it's moving, or do you jump in that taxi while it's moving? But everything's in motion.
I love that you have him on a dirt road, because all I can think of is that end credit scene where we get to see Mark as an alter we hadn't seen up until that point, as a limo driver.
Yeah.
And it's just sort of like, come on, you can't do that.
There's more to explore. You just told us.
On the other hand, we go from your classic no answer answer to now the news coming off of the now completed She-Hulk Attorney at Law. And remember, for months now, we've been talking about how this limited series at Disney had some behind-the-scenes trouble as they struggled with what's the right tone here, how much breaking of the fourth wall is too much breaking of the fourth wall. But now that She-Hulk has officially stuck the landing, both series star Titania Maslany? Did I finally pronounce that right?
There you go. Maslany, yeah.
Okay. The show had to be over before I could finally say it right. Maslany. Damn it. And then Jennifer Gao, this limited series creator. These two ladies have been super chatty about what actually went on behind the scenes in the creation of this limited series. Take, for example, that whole Kevin, the person in charge of the MCU, the gag in the show that actually a robot, super intelligent algorithm. To hear Titania talk, Kevin Feige was very much on board with this idea that spoofed his own role at Marvel Studios, that he immediately got the joke and quickly embraced the whole meta idea that Maslany's Jennifer Walters' She-Hulk character would then serve as the voice of the Marvel fans and ask all of the questions that we've been wanting to ask Kevin about what's going on with the MCU. So when it came time to lock the look for Kevin the Robot, Feige reportedly briefly fought with Gao when it came to what this character would look like. To be specific, Jennifer wanted Kevin the Robot, the AI, to be wearing Feige's ever-present baseball cap, and Kevin balked at this for a bit. And so Jennifer describes that in this big meeting in front of 20 people, I said, Kevin, if you're not going to let me put a hat on that robot, then I quit. There was like a split-second pause, and then Feige says, well, thank you very much, Jessica. You've done some great work for us, and we really appreciate everything. But I guess at this point, the visual development supervisor, Sue Jackson, who did all the visual development on She-Hulk, came up with a compromise. So the idea was that they'd tweak the design of Kevin the Robot, so there would be a piece of metal that stuck out over his three-lens eye doohickey that sort of looked like the brim of a baseball cap. And so, you know, so everybody,
and the semicircle behind it sure gave that dome head appearance behind it. Yeah,
it did.
Now, some people, you know, there's always a complainer and a hater or whatever. And they thought the gag where she busts out of the Disney Plus menu was too much, too gaggy.
Yep.
And there are people who would post in response to that, then you don't know the character, because there's a comic book where she ripped herself out of the page of the comic to bitch at the writer for having a bad ending.
I just saw, is this the one that actually has her busting through the cover?
Yeah.
I mean, I love that this whole idea did get tied back to the original comics, but,
right.
And again, one of the elements that I loved about the finale of season one of She-Hulk was the scene in the backyard with Matt Murdock showing up to sit down with the Walters family. And with production of Daredevil Born Again supposedly getting underway February of next year, Maslany is reportedly checking in regularly with Chris Cox about when she should be reporting for work on that Marvel Studios production for Disney Plus.
It's weird. She's also been seen buying a lot of lip gloss lately. has anyone seen Matt Murdock?
Well, she goes on to say, I keep texting him, like, am I required on set today? And he's like, we'll let you know by lunch. But he keeps putting it off. I've been waiting outside the set in my She-Hulk costume. So just put me in, coach. And
she's now pitching ideas. Hey, what if She-Hulk decides she doesn't necessarily want to be an attorney, but more like a personal masseuse? You know, like, I could learn to do a deep Swedish massage. Hey, Charlie Cox, let's get him on the phone, see how he feels about deep Swedish massage.
I just, again, given what great chemistry these characters had in the penultimate episode when Daredevil and She-Hulk teamed up to take down the, what was his name again? The frog character?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Just happy that they put Daredevil in broad daylight in his costume so I could get a really good look at the color scheme, because it's red and yellow with stripes of gray. And the stripes of gray is what caught me off guard, was like, oh, okay. So, it looks really, really good. I wonder if they're going to keep that design for the Daredevil Reborn.
Well, speaking of which, on the second half of today's show, we're going to talk about where this character goes from here.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Anybody who's listened to Marvelous Disney up until this point knows that Aaron is a big fan of Daredevil. I mean, is it both the comic as well as the Netflix show? Or how far does our love go back for the man who has no fear?
Well, because Spidey and Matt both inhabit New York City, Daredevil seemed to crisscross through Spider-Man's path in the comic books quite a bit. So just through those tenuous connections there, he was like one of the earlier introductions of another hero that wasn't Spider-Man specifically related. And so, I had a few of the comic books, but I didn't collect them regularly. I would just kind of go by what cover looked cool, or if someone recommended a specific storyline, I'd pick up an issue or two here and there. And that was about it. But like when the movie came out with Ben Affleck playing Daredevil, like working at the radio station, we had premieres, so we would see these, you know, a day or two before they actually came out to the public, and then do reviews and all that jazz. And at the time, we really did enjoy the Daredevil movie for what it was, because we didn't have a lot to compare it to at the time. It's like, oh, well, that could have been worse, right? So when you're coming out of the theater going, that could have been worse, it's not the greatest starting off point. No. I ended up seeing the extended version, the unedited, the director's cut, I guess, of that particular Daredevil movie. And it feels like a much stronger movie. It is longer in the sense that, yeah, you don't get to spin it as many times in the theater per day, so you won't make as much money per day. But it's a better movie. And I think it would have stayed longer in the theater had they kept it intact that way. And that's an argument for another day. But there was a lot of subplots, a lot of B storylines that help inform you of the character.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess what intrigues me is if you drill down into the credits of this film, which you're right, I came out in 2003. It was written and directed by Mark Steven Johnson, who previously, I mean, again, kind of an interesting choice, because his earlier successes were Grumpy Old Men from 1993, and then its sequel, Grumpier Old Men. And so it's like, if I were working the list of who to have direct Daredevil, I don't know if that would have been the guy, but this film came out from Regency, and they liked what they saw enough to bring Mark Stevens back to direct the pseudo-sequel, Elektra, in 2005, and then Ghost Rider with Nicolas Cage in 2007. So he did, for a time, carve out a niche for himself in the superhero movie world. But again, what's intriguing, remember, is Ghost Rider comes out in 2007, and 1 year later, the MCU gets underway with the 1-2 punch of Iron Man and Incredible Hulk, and what, within 6 weeks of one another in 2008?
But we never credited in She-Hulk the line from the Hulk when he's on the phone where she says, "Yeah, but he tried to kill you. You tore up, you know, Harlem." And he says the line, "Yeah, but back then I was a different person, literally." And I was like, man. Man, they really swung for the fences on that one. Okay,
yeah, go for it. Yeah. But just to double back for a moment about Daredevil, is that there are a number of Marvel characters that we know and love today, you know, the Captain America or Namor the Submariner, who's just now going to make his debut in Black Panther Wakanda Forever. But there's also this weird window of time in the early 1960s, where it's like there's this white hot thing that's happening at Marvel, you know, between Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and the crew there. But, you know, we get the original Fantastic Four number one comes out November of 61. First issue of Incredible Hulk comes out May of 62. Spider-Man is introduced in Amazing Fantasy 15 in August of 62. Thor makes his debut in the exact same month, in Journey into Mystery 83, so August of 62. Then Iron Man is March of 63. And then right behind these guys, here comes Daredevil number one, the first issue of that comic, in April of 64. So inside of 3 years, you get all of these amazing characters from Marvel, you know, stepping onto the canvas. What was in the water cooler in the building to make that happen? So we have our Daredevil movie in 2003. We have our Elektra sequel in 2005. And then Regency's movie rights revert to Marvel. And this is when we get the Daredevil series over at Netflix that Drew Goddard kind of wrote herd on it. And Drew, for those of you who don't remember, this is the guy who wrote for Buffy and Angel and Alias and Lost. He was also the guy behind the original Cloverfield movie.
Now, right before he did this project, right before he got attached to Daredevil, he directed Cabin in the Woods, which he co-wrote with Joss Whedon, who had already done Avengers at that point. Okay. And I think because they are tight, they've worked together for a long time in their career, especially, you know, when, like you said, with Buffy and Angel. You know, those are Joss projects that he worked with him on. So while Joss has been doing Marvel, Drew was right next to him like, "Hey, man, throw me a bone. what you got?" And so I really was not surprised to see when he became attached to Daredevil. It's like, yeah, I get that. It seems like the dude that's been hanging around the lot that hasn't had the gig yet is like, "Hey, come on, throw me a bone. Give me a thing." And everybody knows him because he's attached to people already that are on the crew or on the staff or on the payroll. It's easier to go, "Yeah, come on in, dude. You're good."
Interesting. I had not made that connection. Okay, so rights revert to Marvel in 2012. Development begins in 2013, and Drew decides, pitches it to Marvel, and they get behind the idea. It's going to be a darker take on the character, that they're going to model the show after specifically crime films of the 1970s. Did you get that vibe when you were watching this on Netflix, or?
Well, I did get the sense that they were allowing themselves to go darker and be more violent. You know, in comparison, like the very first, I want to say two Spider-Man films, he never throws a punch. He's always dodging or webbing, but he never actually physically punches a person. And so in comparison, Daredevil had a hallway scene in both season one and season two where it was like a minute and a half continuous unbroken shot of Daredevil just pummeling the bejesus out of 19 criminals in a long extended hallway scene that was just a sheer delight for those that are fans of like martial arts choreography. You know, I mean, if you can tell if something is cut to within an inch of its life where it's just clip, 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 that they practice like a pose, but they never really understood martial arts. Whereas you watch Keanu Reeves in The Matrix, that dude knows martial arts because they did extended scenes where he fought for like a good 30 seconds without taking a cut. You know, so I mean, that's like the difference with, and we made this comment earlier also about Daredevil, like, man, they could fight. And in Iron Fist, the fights were not good, and he was supposed to be like the best. I can't remember what martial art it was based off of. It was like Kung Fu or whatever, but he was supposed to be the best. And he almost always lost to a henchman until he decided to bring out the Iron Fist. And it's like, come on, Daredevil would beat the living Krasinskis out of you. Yeah, it was just, it was good. It was dark. It was gritty. And they allowed it to be violent and not be so remorseful or have to coddle, you know, children, you shouldn't use punches to solve your arguments. There was none of that safety net that you would normally see in place.
All right. So we get our first season of Daredevil on Netflix. All of the episodes for season one drop on April 10th, 2015. And then less than 11 months later, we get the second season dropping in March of 2016. And then, interesting you bring up Iron Fist, because we then, in August of 2017, got The Defenders, which you made the Avengers connection between Joss and Drew. So, you know, I wonder if that was sort of the inspiration going into this, like, you know, we can do something cool like that too, only...
Oh, I mean, they obviously brought in, you know, Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Iron Fist all had their separate shows all taking place in New York City within blocks of one another, technically speaking, in the Marvel Universe. And from day one, it was, if Daredevil works, just like if Iron Man works, the blueprint is going to lead to, for them it was Avengers, for us it's Defenders. And they obviously succeeded with season one of Daredevil, and then all of the other shows came out and they all did well with the exception of Iron Fist, and it's like, well, three out of four ain't bad, but we need to get to Defenders, so let's limp along with this one weak spot. But the other three were perfectly strong. So there's no reason that they couldn't do it, and it turned out, overall it turned out very, very well.
So again, we get Defender series August of 2017. We get a third season of Daredevil launching in October of 2018. And then 1 month later, Netflix cancels Daredevil. I think at this point, Marvel sort of raised its hands. It's like, we'd like the rights back now. And as we've mentioned previously on the show, this involved waiting for those rights to revert. And in the meantime, though, December of last year, Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio reprised their roles as Matt Murdock and Wilson Fisk, Kingpin, in MCU projects for Marvel Studios. In fact, what was interesting is they both basically dropped for holiday of last year. We got Kingpin finally showing up as the big bad in Hawkeye, and likewise, we had Matt Murdock show up as Peter Parker's lawyer in Spider-Man No Way Home. And evidently by March of just this past year, when the rights to Daredevil officially shifted back, Disney Plus announced the new series, Daredevil Born Again. And so before we wrap up here, Aaron, and having, you know, seen the original movie with Ben Affleck and having seen all three seasons of Daredevil over at Netflix plus The Defenders, and having just seen what was done for She-Hulk, what would you like to see Marvel Studios do going forward with Matt Murdock, with Daredevil Born Again?
The one thing that in the Netflix version that we really didn't get a lot of were those four specific heroes that make up the Defenders did not get to interact with any of the other MCU. They were 100% separated by a gate that was called the Netflix deal or whatever. And so now that Matt has obviously been in Spider-Man, he's been in She-Hulk, we are getting to see what I'm hoping for more of is more interaction within the MCU with the other characters, because a lot of the fun moments within the MCU happen in team-up issues where Spidey and Daredevil go on an adventure together, or when Wolverine and Hulk battle. You know, that was always a great thing. You just love to pit your heroes against one another every once in a while, or get them to go off on a fun adventure. I mean, like, we just had an adventure comic book wise that was very successful of Black Cat and Mary Jane. And it was just the two girls being two girls on an adventure. And it was cool. So I think now that he's within the MCU, we'll get to interact more with it in a more proper way. But in the same notion, I've also complained about Spider-Man. Like, he's always got to have someone next to him. He can't just have a solo Spider-Man adventure. Why is he always got to have, like, Sam Jackson there, or or Tony Stark, or whomever? Because I wanted Spider-Man just to have his own freaking thing for a minute. The difference is, though, Spider-Man's always been contained in a movie that's 2 hours long, right? And so when you've put other characters in there, and it feels crowded because your time constraint is different. But here in Daredevil Reborn, it's going to be over a series of how many episodes did we have? An insane number, wasn't it? Like 16?
I want to say, it's a surprisingly large commitment for the show.
Right. So in that sense, you're going to be spending more time with the character where he's going to have, you know, solo time, downtime, where he's just him. I want to see interaction with Foggy. You got to bring back Foggy Nelson, right? Okay. All the characters that were from the Netflix series need to come back. I mean, the girl that played Elektra was fantastic in that series. Maybe find a way to bring her back. So, yeah, bring back everybody that we love from the original Netflix series, and then let it be as violent as you want to be, because Daredevil is a punch you and beat you with sticks kind of person. So there should be repercussions for violence. People should get damaged and hurt, because that's the way it happens. So, Let it be a darker territory of the MCU. And also, if you allow for there to be a little bit of blood in your Daredevil series, you allow for a hell of a lot of blood for Punisher when he comes around. And then when Wolverine gets back into the scene, we can have claws that aren't bloodless. After they maim 30 people, there's not a drop of blood the whole time. I'm like, really? I guess people are made of air. They should have went like a balloon and farted away. Whenever Wolverine poked, because they don't bleed, they're just full of air, I guess. Anyway, if you're gonna have violence, let it be impactful, let it mean something. Because I think, you know, it's kind of like the opposite of, if you don't show the blood, if you don't show people getting injured, then it makes it less, I can go out and punch someone and that's all right. If I don't agree with them, I can just whop them because there's no repercussions. It's all like the pretend movies. And I think you should show people get knocked out and go to the hospital, and then the guy that punched him gets arrested and has to spend a weekend in jail and go to court and, you know, stupid stuff like that, because violence has repercussions. And that's kind of the point of some of these series sometimes. Was, if you remember how they handled Ben Affleck's case of Daredevil, was, you know, he was beating the crap out of a bad guy, and the child of the bad guy saw him, and all they saw was someone was beating up my dad. And he's like, no, kid, I'm not the bad guy. And that was like his moment of revelation of, oh, maybe I got to change my ways a little bit. And that's a very key instance for Daredevil specifically, about how violence can be impactful to the story of the character, what it means to him.
Okay. Now a new set of eyes. I'm definitely going to be intrigued to see how they tweak the formula as we go into Daredevil Reborn, which again doesn't begin filming till, you know, February of next year. So realistically, I guess that means we're not going to see any of this Daredevil series till 2024. But I guess gives me time to wade into the Netflix show and watch the three seasons that you've talked so highly of. So, But we'll discuss that on a future show. But in the meantime, if, you know, folks are going to, until we get a new episode of Mud up online, where can they find you online?
Well, go to your favorite Twitter machine and type in @AzaProd. If you peruse my pictures, you'll notice, you know, some people age like a fine wine. Mm-hmm. I myself am aging like milk. I'm just getting chunky and sour. But that's okay. That's okay.
Actually, there are two of us who are doing that. Okay. Well, if on the other hand, you're looking for us, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. We also have a couple other podcasts here that we'd love you for you folks to check out. We, of course, have Disney Dish with Len Testa. Likewise, Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, and Looking at Lucasfilm with Brian Gunn. Beyond that, if you could do Aaron and I a favor and head over to Apple Podcasts to and rate and recommend the show you're listening to right now, Marvelous Disney. And if you really, really, really like what you heard, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be helpful. On behalf of Mr. Adams, thank you for listening. And we will be back soon.